Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing this week?
I'm good. I've just remembered that in my garage, I may have discarded a petrol-doused piece of kitchen roll a couple of days ago. And I've just realised that that's not a good idea, is it? I probably need to put that in the bin.
Bloody hell, Pete. What? If we hear a loud...
I left my keys in the door last night.
If we hear a loud explosion or burglars break in mid-recording, that'll be why. Yeah. Nice one.
Very much the situation here.
Why is there petrol doused toilet paper in your garage? What's
I was filling a lawnmower.
Right.
A petrol lawnmower with my carbon footprint, although I do go on several holidays a year and I'm disgusting, is
filthy.
Mainly aviation. I think I've obviously spent more aviation fuel than I have any other kind of fuel. I've never driven. I've never owned a motorcycle or anything. But now I'm upping my carbon footprint by owning a scooter and also owning a petrol or inheriting rather a petrol lawnmower.
So you've got a scooter now. Is that a new thing?
Yeah, I bought a scooter. Wow. Yeah. I passed my CBT. I was on a whim. I'm big on whims, Chris. Sometimes I'll just go,
I know.
Right, what can I do to make my life a little bit more interesting and also difficult? I got myself a scooter and passed my CBT. And I've probably said this on every podcast I've done this week. I'm in this kind of like no man's land of, I've got it fixed. I've got it fixed now, but I was in a situation where I had a scooter. You need to get it on the road, and to get it on the road, you need to register it. But I can't register it until I got insurance. But you can't get insurance because it's unregistered. So I was in this kind of catch-22 awful situation where I was losing my mind a little bit.
Oh dear!
But we're sorted now. I think we're on the right track.
I mean, I've driven a scooter a few times. It is quite fun. It's I would cry if I was riding a motorbike. But a scooter is the right speed, isn't it? It's somewhere between a bike and a motorbike. I don't think I've ever done it in Japan, but I've done it in Italy and China. I don't know why I've never done it here. We should do that next time you're over.
Well, they seem quite popular, don't they? I think it's it would give me a bit more confidence on the road, I would say, if I was ever going to learn to drive.
You won't.
I'm just waiting for the thumbs up from the DVLA so I can get my scooter on the road.
Yeah. Well, it could be the next season of Journey Across Japan on a scooter.
Scooter boys.
I'd love that. That'd be quite fun. Just without the stress of cycling. One thing I do quite like, e-bikes, you know, the bikes where you have like a little motor on and it takes a lot of the stresses and strains out of cycling. I've done that a few times. If you ever go to, what's it called? What's the nice, Kamakura, the nice kind of ancient little town just outside of Tokyo, not far from Yokohama. If you go there, ladies and gentlemen, or Pete, get a bike, but get an e-bike and you can cycle around the whole area in a day. And it's really amazing way of seeing the kind of town on an e-bike. I love that. It's one of my nicest memories my first year in Japan. I might get one. I don't know where my bikes are from Journey Across Japan. I've got two bikes, right? And then I left them in Tokyo with Tokyo Creative, who helped me with the series 2 years ago. And I don't know where they've gone. I think they're just in Ian's house somewhere. Good old Ian.
Yeah.
My bikes.
I heard you threw them in the canal.
Revenge. In my bitterness, my bitter state after Journey Across Japan, I tossed my bikes in a river and swore to never ride a bicycle again. We've got a story this week from Paul from Melbourne. Story of the week, and it is, dear Chris and Pete, thank you for the great podcast. I have a couple of stories from my time living in the homeless and day labourer district of Japan, Nishinari in Osaka. I lived there as it was cheap and close to Namba, the heart of Osaka. It's a great part of Japan. It gives a glimpse of a character filled rough and seedy Japan from days gone by. I also recommend the nearby districts of Tennoji and Tsurahashi for the same reason. My first story occurred with a gentleman who appeared to be a local day labourer. Started chatting to me while I was stopped at a red light on my bicycle. He asked me in impressive English where I was from and told me about his travels abroad. He then asked me if I would like to go for a coffee, and I told him I couldn't as I was busy and said goodbye. At the next lights, I heard a yell from behind. I turned around to see him running up to me with a hot can of Boss coffee, which he handed to me with a smile and a farewell. I think this sums up the good-hearted hospitality found in Japan towards foreigners. My second story is about the time my bicycle was stolen. Oh no, outside of my Nishinari flats. I didn't think much about it until a few months later when I was living in Hirakata City. I received a call from the police. I couldn't understand what they were saying, so I handed the phone to my Japanese friend. The police had found my bicycle and were asking me if I wanted to pick it up. My friend explained that I couldn't as I was living in a different city. The police then offered to deliver it to where I was living. Lo and behold, it turned up on my doorstep a week later. I was thoroughly impressed by this display of generosity. Keep up the good work, fellas. Paul from Melbourne, Australia. Wow. That's some of the nicest, most heartwarming stories we've had recently, I think, isn't it? And an advert for Boss Coffee right there. You can't have time for a real coffee.
That is like an advert for Boss Coffee, isn't it? That is very much like it.
Anybody listening for a PR firm here or a marketing agency? You've just got your idea for Boss Coffee.
Hell of a story.
Why is no one? Yeah. That's a really nice gesture. I don't think no one's run over to me with a Boss Coffee in 8 years. It's nice. But then I've never had my bike stolen as well. I remember on Journey Across Japan, we were terrified. The 46 days cycling, the bikes were just left out the front of the hotel, various hotels we were staying in. And somehow they made it without being nicked, because bike theft is a thing in Japan. Whilst crime is generally low, bike theft is higher than you'd think. That's a nice story.
You sort of see a lot of bikes that aren't really locked up, or they've got those really kind of like arbitrary little, those little kind of like weak little locks on the back wheel that you just kind of click in and click out again. And a mate used to live in, I think, Shinjuku, and she said that, like, half the time, it's not really a theft. It's just drunk people just getting the wrong bike and just cycling home.
I can believe that. I can believe that. But it's interesting to hear about this district in Osaka. It often comes up a lot. People say, what's the most dangerous place in Japan? A lot of people say this Nishinari district in Osaka. But then you also hear lots of heartwarming and nice stories like this. And I think recently they've done up the area. I love Osaka. It's a very gritty kind of place. It's a lot kind of, the people are a lot more friendly and kind of crazy and wacky than Tokyo, in my view. And the city is more dynamic and exciting and unpredictable and gritty. The word is gritty. You think Osaka, that is the word, most overused word, but accurate as well. And I've never been to this area, but there's a lot of day laborers, the sort of folks who kind of just work on a day-by-day basis, cash in hand. Many are homeless, unfortunately. But it looks like a really cool place. And if I was going to, somebody put a gun to my head and asked me to make a documentary tomorrow afternoon, I'd get the first train to Osaka and I'd go there and interview people and make a documentary. What do you reckon? Good idea, Pete? Should I do it?
I'm fairly certain I've seen a couple from Vice in that kind of area, and they were very, very compulsive viewing. So, more of that, please.
It's definitely Vice territory, isn't it? But that was a nice act by the police. Japan's judicial system and the police sometimes don't do so well in international news. And we turn our attention this week to Carlos Ghosn. One of Japan's, one of the most famous foreign executives living in Japan, and the boss of Nissan. He recently, this week, the UN told Japan that its treatment of Carlos Ghosn when he was held in custody for 180 days was fundamentally unfair, which has annoyed a lot of the Japanese government, I think. And yet a lot of people, I imagine, are sympathetic with what happened. Quick recap, what happened with Carlos Ghosn, Pete? Do you remember the great Carlos Ghosn story?
I do, yeah. He was, is he Lebanese or Israeli? I forget where he's
from. Lebanon-Brazilian.
Lebanon-Brazilian, that's right, yeah. He was very popular in Nissan. He was discovered to have been possibly involved in some white-collar crime. And the Japanese, to be fair, did like come down like a big sack of bricks on him, didn't they? And it's kind of rare to see that in the modern world, of seeing kind of people who are accused of
someone
quite
as untouchable
quite
as Carlos.
Corporate crime.
Yeah.
It's a very rare sight. I'm not against it. I just think it's a very rare sight, and it was almost quite refreshing. But clearly, the way that they administered the house arrest and stuff, and how he wasn't allowed to talk to his wife unless it was through a lawyer, was definitely against the. Definitely against some kind of international law.
To give a quick kind of 1 minute recap, in the late 90s, Nissan, the car company, wasn't doing very well, looked like it could go bankrupt. And then Carlos Ghosn, who had a track record turning companies around, turned up, he got the top job, and he basically gutted the company. He fired, I think, 30% of the workforce, a lot of people, made them redundant, did some things that a Japanese CEO couldn't really do, given that the company was so tied in. Like, it's hard to make important changes to a company in Japan without pissing off your stakeholders and whatnot. But he did things that most Japanese CEOs wouldn't normally do. And credit where it's due, he saved the company, which amazed a lot of people. And in the space of 2 to 3 years, he turned it right around from in the red to being highly profitable. And as a result, he was hailed in Japan as this sort of hero, this foreign brilliant business leader. He became the most famous foreign business leader in Japan. They even made a comic book series about him, didn't they? Remember the manga comic book series from 2003? He won loads of awards, he's about as big as they come in terms of executives, and I think he got a lot of awards in the UK as well. I don't think he was knighted, but he got an OBE or something. He got some sort of title. And then this untouchable executive, in November 2018, as he was landing in Tokyo on his private jet, he was basically taken into custody, and for 130 days, sorry, I said 180 earlier, he was held in detention and rearrested three times in a row. It's the way they do it in Japan. It's pretty dicey. They'll take you into detention. They'll release you after your time is up, after you kind of reach the maximum limit. And then as you're walking down the steps of the police station, leaving basically, they'll rearrest you again for something else. I think, yeah, I mean, most foreigners living in Japan, if you talk to them about Japan's judicial system, it does get them a little bit on edge, including me, you know. They have a policy of basically you're guilty until proven innocent. It's almost like the opposite of what we know in the West. And yeah, it's a little bit dicey. And anyway, what happened was after a year or so of being in this situation, one day he disappeared. He disappeared from Japan while he was under house arrest, I believe. And somebody, he just popped up in Lebanon, didn't he? About 2 or 3 days later in Beirut on 30th of December. And he'd been smuggled out in like a cello case, which was all rather bizarre. I think a lot of the goodwill that he had built up in Japan was lost overnight. Like a lot of people that I'd spoken to were kind of feeling a bit bad for him, because what they think happened is Carlos Ghosn had basically had some sort of bust up with his protege at Nissan. He wanted to merge Nissan and Renault, the French car company, and some Japanese executives were like, no, screw that. Let's set him up, and grasped him up to the police, and then everything happened. But it's one of those situations. It sounds like he did some dodgy things. He used, allegedly, Nissan's money to pay off houses in Brazil and Lebanon, I think.
That's certainly what he's accused of anyway. We can't say that he...
No.
We can't put allegedly in there, but that's certainly what he was accused of by the Japanese government. And obviously, he's the Japanese authorities, and obviously he's not been tried yet because he keeps hiding in little boxes, doesn't he?
He does. He very much does so. And but when he left Japan, it was interesting. A lot of people I spoke to who were foreign were like, yeah, go Carlos. He escaped this sort of injustice and this ruling. And it's not by the UN. It's by a panel of experts that work with the UN, I think.
Mm.
This ruling has certainly added fuel to the fire. The whole issue had kind of gone away. It was a really big news story in Japan for a lot of 2018-19. And then obviously it just sort of disappeared overnight when the COVID situation popped up. But he got away with it, it seems. And now there'll never be any justice. But there you go. It's interesting. Whether he's guilty or not, I don't think we'll ever find out. But all I know is Nissan hasn't been doing so well recently. So his departure... and seems to have led to Nissan going downwards a little bit as well. So, I don't know.
I mean, it's almost as if there's a worldwide pandemic where industry has been hit terribly.
Didn't realise you were
probably put that in as well.
An expert on economics, Pete. there you go. The story of Carlos Ghosn.
Dear Lord.
But, God, I remember it was 2019 when was it 2019 or 2020 when we covered the story? I think it was a year ago when he escaped now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I just enjoyed the fact that how much you love this story. I love how much you're obsessed with Carlos Ghosn. It's very enjoyable.
It's just a cello case, isn't it? And Carlos Ghosn. I think I knew about Carlos Ghosn living here, as most people did. He's all over the place in the news and had this sort of heroic figure. So it was kind of unimaginable for him to sort of have this fall from grace, I think, and worried a lot of foreign executives in Japan. Who worried that they might face similar treatment. So, I don't know. But there you go. Japanese government is worried that it could encourage those who would stand criminal trial to entertain the idea that flight could be justified and prevent the realisation of justice and the proper functioning of the criminal justice system in each country. Legitimate concern potentially there. Doesn't set a great precedent. But there you go. Carlos Ghosn, he's escaped. And maybe he's got off of it. He's got off the hook. In other news, shops in Japan have been enlisting the help of a robot to ensure customers are wearing masks as the country prepares for a possible third wave of the coronavirus. RoboV, developed by the Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International in Kyoto, is able to pick out customers who aren't wearing masks and politely ask them to cover up. And it can also intervene when they fail to socially distance while queuing up to pay. It's a good idea, I think, because it can be a bit awkward for shop staff to say anything to customers who aren't wearing a mask. They're a little bit reluctant to do that in Japan, given the politeness. People probably wouldn't say anything And while I see most people in everyday life here wearing masks, I would say like 99.99% of people do wear a mask. Every now and then you see one person who's not, and nobody says anything really because they're a bit shy and uncomfortable about doing it.
So yeah.
If a robot was there to be like, "Oi, get your mask on," might save the day. What do you reckon? What do you make of Robo?
No, Mr. Naughty Robot. I'm imagining Johnny Five from the film Short Circuit, but like with a really, really bad attitude.
God, Johnny Five, can't stand that film. It looks a bit like Pepper the Robot. It might even be the Pepper the Robot in disguise.
Yes.
Is it Pepper the Robot with like an update?
Well, I guess if I was going to program it, all it's doing is looking for faces without mouths. And then go, well, he's got a mask on or she's got a mask on. But as soon as you see the mouth, put that mouth away, sunshine. Easy peasy.
I think one of the greatest tragedies of Japan is that its robo-filled future hasn't really come to fruition, really, has it? I mean, you've got Pepper the Robot in like Docomo or SoftBank. I think it's SoftBank stores, the phone company, come with Pepper the Robot. Mm. And It's kind of impressive the way it moves. It's like a robot on wheels. It looks like a human apart from the legs, waist down. It's just wheels. that's a crap description of it. Pure white. It talks in a kind of annoying voice, and it doesn't really do a whole lot. But its arms move nicely, so it's definitely worth the millions of dollars SoftBank have spent putting them in stores. But other than that, I haven't really seen much else go on. Every now and then you see like robots that can talk, pre-programmed robots that look like humans, androids and stuff. Like I was in a shopping mall in Odaiba near the Future Museum, Minai Kam, and there was a customer support desk with a woman there. But as you get closer, you realize it's not a woman at all. It's an android who looks incredibly lifelike and moves really like in a lifelike manner. That was kind of cool. That was really impressive. And that was a little bit scary. In the uncanny valley. But yeah, other than that, it hasn't really happened, has it? Can you think of any robots? Robot dinosaurs?
No, we were promised in the 80s and the 90s that our future will be filled with robots. But I think what's taken over is just kind of like web browser based AI algorithms.
Seriously.
They're the computers and robots of the future.
I honestly think that's the way it's going to happen, really. I don't think there's going to be the sophisticated robots that we think about. It's just a bit too cumbersome, isn't it? It's just going to be AI on a phone, and that's not exciting.
Agreed.
It's not exciting at all.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
This week on Stakhanov.
One Direction's Liam Payne was in the studio talking to Jackmate's Happy Hour about life as a global pop star. With untold stories about his time on The X Factor, life in the world's biggest boy band, and going solo, this one is not to miss.
I was part of this massive machine, and I knew my part in the machine very well. So I knew what I was doing every day. But then when that machine falls away, and you're in the world, and the world's just happening around, like, where do you fit?
You can catch the full episode on Spotify. If that doesn't tickle your fancy, on this week's Football Ramble Presents, Kate and Jim sat down with former Chelsea, Juventus and England striker and football legend Enya Luko to discuss her storied career and her autobiography, They Don't Teach This.
Whether it's racism, whether it's bullying, whether it's sexism, often these behaviours are silent. They're not always something that's said. It's a feeling, it's a set of behaviours by a group of people towards you that makes you feel incredibly isolated.
You can hear more from Enya Luko with Football Ramble Presents on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All that and more at Stakhanov.
We now turn our attention to the fax machine. What have we got this week, Mr. Dawson?
We've got a message from, who's that? Ariel. Ariel says, Dear Lord and Saviour Pete, correct. And also Chris, I absolutely love the podcast and the YouTube channel. They provide a more broad perspective on Japan. See what I did there. Something beyond just weeb anime culture. And that in turn made me appreciate the country and its culture a lot more. I've recently come across an article called about Johatsu, people who apparently decide to just leave their old lives behind and disappear without a warning. They usually do this with the help of organizations that are specialized in making people disappear. I don't know if this has been discussed before on the podcast, but I found this to be an interesting, quite frankly, not so surprising phenomenon, knowing that Japan has a big work-life balance issues. I'd be interested to hear your takes on it and whether or not you've heard about this before. Thank you for entertaining us with free content. Keep the good work, guys. Ariel. Oh, interesting. Yeah, so people who are just kind of like a secret railroad who just gets rid of you. I want to leave now. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we talked about this before, but it's a very interesting phenomena. Johatsu literally means evaporation, which sounds pretty scary, pretty ominous. But, you know, there's a lot of people are under a lot of pressure in Japan, right? In work, in family relationships, sort of harsh work culture. And people do just decide one night that it's time to get out. And I've heard of two people I know who have had friends and family that have done it. A good friend of mine, I think one of his brother or sister just disappeared in the night one day. and just vanished. And then a few years later, they turned up at the other end of Japan in somewhere like Nagasaki. They travelled like 500 miles and were like, oh, I'm doing well. I live in Nagasaki now. And how you doing? That happens. Inescapable debt is one of the big things. If you've got a lot of debt, a lot of people just run away in the night to get away from it. Loveless marriages, that's another common one. People who want to get out of their job, it's another option as well. I'm not sure how prevalent it is, really. I've got a statistic that in 2015, Japan's National Police Agency had registered 82,000 missing people, which is quite a lot. Jeez. It's a fair few people. But what's impressive is the service, the services that exist to help these people. And I think there's some good documentaries on YouTube if you just type in Jouhatsu, J-O-U-H-A-T-S-U, Japan's disappearing people. And you enlist these services and they'll basically come round at like 10 o'clock at night, pack up all your stuff and then whisk you off in a car. And it's done with a really, really professional level of service. And I think it'd be a great topic for a TV show or a film or something. These sort of night moving services. Yeah. Maybe I should do it. If I get fed up with the YouTube again. Yeah.
Disappear yourself.
Disappear. Wouldn't last for long though, would it? Mm. Someone would just hack in to my Twitter and be like, oh, he's in Nagasaki, isn't it? That's what Chris is doing.
Nagasaki.
Nagasaki. I was giving the game away. Now everyone knows where I'll be. Yeah, I see why it's a thing. What do you think? What are your thoughts, Pete? Jouhatsu.
I don't know. I think it's. I don't find a lot of my days obsessed with, like, you know, escaping my life, because I quite like my life. But obviously, a lot of people are find it very difficult in their own personal situations. I think the debt thing's a big thing, and that only gets that's only getting worse and worse for a lot of people as wages get lower and the price of living goes up. It's these kind of services. I think compounding debt with paying for someone to disappear you may not be helping the situation very much. But,
imagine that. And how are we going to pay for this disappearance service? Oh dear. I've got a list of the main reasons of motivation behind doing it, though. Domestic violence, gambling debt, religious cults, stalkers, employers, the shame of job loss, divorce, and even failing an exam. These are all some of the key motivations for doing it. And to do this fly-by-night service, it's actually not that expensive. It could be anywhere between $450 to $2,600, depending on how much stuff requires to be moved and whatnot. It depends on possessions, depends on the distance, depends on if it's a night or a day move, if children are brought along, and if someone is evading debt collectors. I think you've got to pay a premium in that case. But wow, that's really interesting. Could be a good topic for a documentary. Add that on the list.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the lesser of two evils when it comes to the high suicide rate in Japan, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting out of a situation rather than taking more drastic measures, obviously, definitely preferable, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Jouhatsu, evaporation. Hello, Chris and Pete, a long-time listener of the podcast, first-time writer. Since the age of 12, I've been fascinated by the culture, language, and just about everything about Japan. Now, at the age of 30, I finally had the opportunity and financial stability to make my dream happen. After a long talk with my wife and her approval and blessing, I plan to take a one-month trip with my younger brother and explore as much of Japan as possible. I spent a whole year self-teaching Japanese and suddenly bloody COVID crushed my dream. Oh, for God's sake. Sorry to hear that, Jamie. Eventually, I'll make my trip happen. I plan on seeing as much as possible of the less tourist-cluttered prefectures. My question for you both is, from all the prefectures that are less commonly visited by tourists, have you found that some places are more accepting or welcoming to tourists than others? P.S. Please buy a beer for Natsuki on us listeners and viewers. One fresh from the cold box. Silly fact, I'd listened to the podcast for a long time without seeing Pete in any video. And from his voice, I always imagined him to look like Dominic Monaghan, Merry from Lord of the Rings. Jamie, Toronto, Canada. Do you look like Dominic Monaghan from Lord of the Rings? Merry?
I mean, my restricted height would probably dictate that, yes, I probably could pass for a hobbit or an elf or something small. But no, I don't look like Dominic Cummings. Not Dominic Cummings. Dominic Cummings. This is the only Dominic Cummings.
Oh, God.
It's the only Dominic in UK life at the moment. Yeah, no, I don't like Dominic Monaghan from... he was in Lost and also Lord of the Rings, wasn't he? He's also in... I think he was in Flash Forward as well, which is a TV show I enjoyed immensely, but it didn't last for very long, that one. Got it.
Was it a Netflix series? They don't seem to last very long, do they?
No, it'll probably return as a Netflix series.
Jolly good. Well, on the subject of less tourist clutter prefectures where people are nice, I'm going to say pretty much anywhere in Kyushu, actually. While I was on journey across Japan, while I was down there, I think we had Sharla in Japan down there and Chris Okino at the time before he fled to South Korea. And they both went off and did a video somewhere in Kagoshima, and they came back and they talked about how every local they'd met had just been really friendly and nice to them. So that's always stuck with me.
Mm.
But generally on my travels around Kyushu, which isn't overly touristy, apart from Fukuoka maybe, people there seem to be very open and warm and welcoming. And while everyone is in Japan, from my experience, in Tohoku in the north, in Tokyo, they're a little bit more reserved. They're just much more... wackier and outgoing and fun, I think, in the south and the west parts of the country. Does that tally up with your experiences, Pete?
Yeah, I think outside of major cities as well, it's probably not a bad shout as well.
Yeah,
I like getting out there. I like meeting people who aren't from the big cities.
I just realised, by the way, on the previous question about Johatsu, ties in very nicely with Carlos Ghosn, doesn't it? He paid a hefty sum to evaporate to Lebanon.
Yeah, I guess so. He disappeared himself. He evaporated.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars, apparently, to get those mercenaries on board.
Yeah.
And a cello case that could fit him. I've got one from Tom from Vermont. Over to you, Pete.
What up, lad, says Tom. So this question is mostly for Chris, but I'd love Pete's third-party insight too. That's what I'm bringing to the party. Third-party insight. This came to me while I was watching Shaki's video from the Sapporo Snow Festival for Japanese practice. I saw Chris talking to Natsuki in the background. How much English versus Japanese do you speak with your Japanese friends? Does it vary by person? I'm applying to JET this year. I don't think I would have done so if it weren't for the YouTube channel. Listening to the podcast for the last several months has gotten me more and more interested. It's always great fun and always improves a workout or a drive. Mm-hmm. Tom from Vermont. Do you speak a lot to your Japanese friends in Japanese or English, or is it 50-50?
It depends on the person, really. Obviously, Ryotaro, we just speak English because he's so bloody good, native English speaker level. My good friend Yuki, who you may have seen in a few videos, he's better at English than Natsuki. But I usually speak Japanese with him because I don't know what, I don't know really, because I get the impression he doesn't really want to speak English that much. So I use it more with him. Whereas with Natsuki, who has, as we discussed, good vocabulary knowledge when it comes to English, albeit lackluster grammar skills, I speak Japanese with him because he doesn't get much chance to use his English, right? So I see when I hang out with Natsuki, right, it's his chance to speak English. And I think he wants to. He loves speaking English. He just hasn't really had the chance to learn it properly. So that's why I do speak more English with Natsuki than you would think I would, even though we could probably make things happen a lot quicker and a lot less effortlessly if we did just do it in Japanese. Yeah. I think you and I should try speaking Japanese an entire podcast, Pete. What do you reckon? Yeah, how would that work?
That would be a very long podcast. Very, very long podcast. Mainly to do with like food, I would say.
Well, I mean, kind of like Natsuki, your knowledge of Japanese is quite similar to him. It's quite sporadic and random. Like, you know words that most people wouldn't know, like kokunai, domestic.
Kokunai.
Yeah. You always surprise me with that.
But it's always like what you need, isn't it? So it's like if you for whatever reason, need to tell people that you've eaten too much, you use certain words. And if you're sort of looking for like kokunai, like the what do you call the? I've not been in an airport such a long time. Domestic. Arrival terminal. Yeah, I'm sort of looking for that, so I learned the word kokunai.
I like your use of the word chigaimasu.
Oh yeah, because I'm just doing mistakes left, right, and centre.
It's a good word to know. Like if it kind of means like no. It's a good substitute for no, isn't it? It means like, oh, it's different. It's not that. It's different. Chigaimasu. Yeah, that's a good use of that word, Pete. We'd like to hear you use Japanese more often, I think, on the Abroad Japan podcast.
Would you know?
Let's make it happen. It would be cool to do some sort of challenge one day when airplanes and travel become a thing again, hopefully around spring next year. Get you over here and do like a crash course Japanese, like 1 week in a Japanese language.
Yeah, one
language
of those
school.
Ones that are in like in Tokyo where you just take a week and just, and you sort of go, oh, that sounds really cool. And you're like, oh, I don't want to go to school when I'm going to live.
We could film it, make a series. Pete's Japanese extravaganza adventure. It'd be great.
All right.
Inspire
then,
the masses. Inspire Japanese language learning. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days, guys. Still all over again on Wednesday. But for now, no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, have yourself a great weekend, what's left of it. Do watch the new Abroad in Japan, Journey Across Japan, Lots of Things from Japan in episode where Joey and I finally reach Mount Fuji. But do we see it? You'll have to find out in the episode. But check it out, enjoy it, and we'll see you on Wednesday. Do it all over again on the Abroad in Japan podcast. Have a good one.
A Stakhanov production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.